Visitors in the Struggle for Racial Justice, a reading by Aisha Ansano, ministerial intern at First Church in Boston. No matter what tactics and methods racial justice activists use, the general response of society will be a collective head shaking and tsk-tsking, because what people are actually complaining about are not the specific tactics that are being used in the struggle for racial justice, but that the struggle for racial justice exists at all. I imagine that for most people, the immediate reaction to that statement is defensiveness. I really don't think that the struggle for racial justice shouldn't exist, someone might respond. I just think there are better ways to go about it than blocking traffic and making me late for work. I get annoyed and frustrated, and it really doesn't convince me to join your fight. What exactly is going to convince that person to join the fight? Picket signs on the side of the road, then they'll just think, look at those troublemakers disturbing the peace over there as they drive on their way to work. Then they'll promptly forget about it. It's not the specific methods that are making people uncomfortable. It's the fact that the struggle for racial justice is seeping into their awareness in ways they can't ignore. Think about it in terms of this metaphor. You're visiting a foreign country where the customs are very different from what you're used to, and the language is different, and some of the things they do are not only different, but make you deeply uncomfortable. As a guest in that country, it is not for you to say that the things that the people who live there are doing are wrong. Instead, your role is to learn, to pay attention, and try to understand how things work and to adapt. But if you do something that goes against their norms, it's also your role as a guest to not insist that they let you do things however you want to do them. It is your role as a guest to pause and consider what you're doing. White people tend to be visitors in the struggle for racial justice, ones that aren't forced to be there, but can choose to come in and leave whenever they like. People of color reside in the struggle for racial justice by virtue of their race. As people who are constantly in the struggle, people of color have the right to make claims on what they find okay and not okay, what they see as helpful and not helpful.
The offensiveness of my pain. The Offensiveness of My Pain by Shane Paul Neal. I'm on my way to a job where I am the only black person in the office. I work for people who are either not going to ask, I work for people who either don't care or don't know about Alton Sterling or Philando Castile. They're going to ask me, "How are you this morning?" And the simple truth is, I can't be honest. I can't say that I'm scared and angry and that I want to take a mental health day. I can't say that I and people like me subconsciously fear for our lives on a daily basis. I can't say how I am this morning because it will make them uncomfortable and offended The offensiveness of my pain is why we have to remind America over and over again that black lives matter. Because if you lack empathy for our tears, it's likely you will lack respect for our lives. In preparing for that reading, I realized I didn't know who Alton Sterling and Florindo Castillo were. And in case some of you don't, Alton Sterling was killed July 5th, 2016 in Baton Rouge while being held down by two policemen. Philando Castillo was killed the next day and outside of St. Paul, Minnesota, after being stopped for a traffic violation where his taillight was out.
Piece, The Invisibility of Whiteness, written by John A. Powell. John Powell is a law professor and writer, and is currently the director of the Haas Institute for Fairness and Inclusion at the University of California, Berkeley. The Invisibility of Whiteness means that one doesn't have to notice that one is white. So there are people, and then there are black people. There are people, and there are Latino people. Just people, just folks, turn out to be white, but we don't notice it. White people have the luxury of not having to think about race. That it's a benefit of being white, of being part of the dominant group. Just like men don't have to think about gender, the system works for you, and you don't have to think about it. So they live in white space, and then they don't have to think about it. First of all, they think of race as something that belongs to somebody else. The blacks have race. Maybe Latinos have race. Maybe Asians have race. But they're just white. They're just people. That's part of being white.
The words I'm about to read are by the Reverend Derek Jackson, who is Director of Contextual Ministry at Meadville Lombard Theological School. He's treasurer of Diverse Revolutionary Unitarian Universalist Multicultural Ministries, DRUM, and co-chair of both the UU Ministers Association Center Committee and its Institute for Excellence in Ministry. You're invited to close your eyes during this reading. Words are primary. We think and talk about spirituality, but are hesitant to experience it. In the Black Church, I experience worship that engages body, mind, heart, and soul. But I see many UUs hesitant to engage the heart, the body, and the soul. They only want to stimulate the mind. They look for sermons that make them think and find sermons that stir the heart lacking. I have had to make peace within myself about my preaching, as I have no interest in the intellectual sermon. I want to touch the heart, to nurture the soul. My sermons are intellectually informed, but rarely intellectually focused. In fact, my least favorite sermons are my intellectual ones. The intellectualism in Unitarian Universalism comes with a culture of stillness. We are expected to sit quietly in our seats, listen intently with no emotion on our faces, no movement in our bodies. We are supposed to wait until after the service to express ourselves. I grew up in a culture of engagement. We had permission to respond to the service, to say amen when we were moved by the words or music, to clap our hands and smile and nod our heads whenever the Spirit moved us. We lived the hymn, "When the Spirit Says Do," every time we gathered for worship. I have had to learn to restrain myself in UU circles, which distances me from the worship. Sometimes our worship feels more like a lecture to me. The first time I preached at a UU congregation, I was unsure of how my sermon was being received because there was no visible response. It wasn't until after the service that I learned that people did enjoy the sermon. Even now, I get slightly unnerved by the lack of response. I construct my services with UU stillness in mind. Any attempt at a more embodied worship feels experimental and risky instead of one of many ways worship happens. I have always loved youth and young adult worship, as those services are generally more heart and soul centered and invites engagement and connection.
This is a responsive reading to The Death of Michael Brown by Teresa Soto. Turn and look at your neighbor. Not only can you probably see them, you can experience being in the same space with them today. If you're called as a court witness, you could speak to the truth that they exist. Today, we will bear witness to the death of Michael Brown. I will offer a part of the story of Michael Brown. When I extend my hand to you, you will respond with, "We bear witness." Now let's try it. With reverence and sorrow, we remember the death of Michael Brown. We know Black Lives Matter.
We bear witness.
On Saturday, August 9th, 2014, Michael Brown was shot by an officer of the Ferguson Police Department in Ferguson, Missouri. We know Black Lives Matter.
We bear witness.
The media gives us conflicting stories. We know Black Lives Matter.
We bear witness.
We are not distracted by the misinformation. We know Black Lives Matter.
We bear witness.
Misinformation encourages us to put our frustration and sadness somewhere outside of ourselves, outside of these walls, on the police, on the dead young man, on the system. We know Black Lives Matter.
We bear witness.
As a community, we reflect on the thread that connects the actions of the armed police officer with our own. We examine our snap judgments. We challenge the times that we have remained silent while others suffered. We know Black Lives Matter.
We bear witness.
We recognize that in order to challenge a system that is built to maintain racism, we must contemplate the effects of our everyday actions. We know Black Lives Matter.
We bear witness.
We do not look away from the things that are hard to see. We know Black Lives Matter.
We bear witness.
When justice eludes us,
we bear witness.
We take courage.
We bear witness.
We extend love.
We bear witness.